Welcome to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. We introduce you to the people and passions of the Faculty of Arts and Humanities at VIU and share stories about events and projects happening on campus. My name's Theo Finnegan, and I'm talking to James Mark from VIU's Music Department. On Friday, February 10th from 10 till 11:30 in the Malaspina Theatre and live streaming on YouTube, James will give a presentation and performance entitled On Bach's Chaconne for Solo Violin. James Mark was born and raised on Vancouver Island and studied music at VIU, York University, and finally Cal Arts, where he went on to become faculty. Currently, James is a professor of music at VIU, where he has been teaching for over a decade. James continues to actively perform, arrange, and compose music, and he has performed with the Vancouver Island Symphony since 1994, and is the writer, musical director for the Yellow Point Christmas Spectacular. So you've been studying music for your whole life, it seems. I was reading your bio on the VIU website. Age four?
Yeah, started when I was four. I think my mom signed me up. It certainly wasn't my idea. And I was pretty excited. I remember like when my violin arrived, I think we went down to the bus depot and picked it up. It was sort of a big deal and came in this giant box. And I think I spent the whole day just in the box. I think I drew a car on the side of the box and was riding it down the stairs. I don't think I cared too much about the instrument.
Obviously, when you're a four-year-old, you kind of want to play with the box, right? And you want to just muck around. But obviously, at some point, it becomes probably still fun, but also something you had to work at.
It happened twice in my life. One was around grade 10 or 11, and I had to make a serious choice between sports, which I wasn't naturally good at anyways, and music. And life was just getting too busy. You know, I had expectations in terms of, you know, schoolwork, but also had, you know, practice outside of that, my violin lessons, orchestra. There was a fairly strong program in Enamo for classical music at the time, and I was very entrenched in that. At that point, I also didn't think I would do music as a career. I thought it would be a horrible career. Why would somebody do that? There's no money in it. I just didn't see a future. So I actually started out in sciences and went to University of Victoria for science. And, you know, it wasn't a good fit for me, science. I ended up dropping out of the other science program and then coming back to VIU of all places, because it was probably one of the only schools in the province that would allow me to come mid-semester, or come in January and try to do a program. And they had a diploma at the time that was sort of a transfer program. There was no degree at that time. So that kind of became a safe haven. I wanted to study jazz and break away from classical music anyways. So it was a nice place to be. So that was the second time, was sort of the university where I decided that actually I should pursue something that I love and something I enjoy doing. Because what I noticed when I was at UVic was that I was spending all my time in the practice room and working on my instrument and performing and not doing my homework. So and that's where that big sort of question was do you do what you love, or do you do what you think is going to earn money and da, 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 da. So it was a huge decision.
Were you kind of like worried about career stuff, or were you more, I just want to do something that I want to do right now? Or was it in the back of your mind, or was it in the front of your mind, or how did that work?
I think I've always had a strong feeling of wanting to be a family man and a supporter. Family was always on my mind, even early on. I knew that that was kind of an important thing for me. So I wanted to have some sort of stability that I could be a provider. And that was something that my dad did really well, my mom as well, right? Mm. So both my parents were good role models in that way. So I felt like that was something I needed to do and wanted to do and wanted to sort of be able to support a family unit. And so, yeah, money, you know, some sort of ability to earn money. And I just didn't see that with music. And so, again, at that university time, I was really sort of torn between doing what you love, you know, don't work a day in your life if you do what you love kind of idea. And making a living. And I kind of figured, well, even if I made a halfway living with music, at least I would be happy doing it. So I went down that pathway and really had a good time doing my undergrad. I did 2 years at VIU and then 2 years, well, a year and a half at VIU and then 2 years at York University in Toronto. And I remember really clearly submitting my final paper. It was a big sort of graduate style thesis that one of our profs, you know, thought would be good for us to do to, you know, finish your undergrad with a master style, you know, huge paper that we had to write. And I remember submitting that and thinking, oh crap, now what? Right. And somewhere between submitting that and getting back to my dorm, I sort of, you know, went through some heavy thinking and decided I want to teach. I love music. I love teaching. I'd spent a lot of my summers teaching sailing. That was sort of my summer job. Mm. And loved being engaged, loved being in the classroom, loved working with the students, and also had a love of music. Mm. But not all that interested in teaching high school. I liked the higher level. So it kind of dawned on me that, you know, being a university professor is a thing. And that seems like a job where you can teach at the highest level and also sort of keep a performing career. So I could kind of keep both going. Yeah. And that's where I sort of started looking at, well, what do you need to do to do that job? And so that started that journey.
Two things that I wanted to pick up on there. You mentioned your parents as role models. Were they musical role models too? Like, so your mom put you in lessons. Was it a musical house? Like, is that where it sort of comes from originally, do you think?
50-50. My mom, huge. My mom was a huge role model for music. She was a piano player. So I used to spend hours listening to her work towards her exam. So when I was, you know, preschool age, I would just lie there under a skylight and watch the clouds go by. She'd practice her scales, go up and down the keyboard, and play all of her repertoire. And sometimes I'd even lie just under the piano and just listen to it. So I was surrounded by a lot of music from my mom. And then my dad's polar opposite, you know, mostly listens to talk radio, doesn't really engage with music in that way. He loved a couple of bands, big on the Beatles, big on Canadian band, The Band. Yep. And so he would listen to that and crank it every Saturday and Sunday morning. It was kind of his jam. And so I kind of grew up on some of that music, yep. But the classical stuff all came from my mom, and that was her influence. And she also played French horn, and that's sort of her main love. But, you know, she used to accompany me on piano when I was learning and just, yeah. I mean, it was really her that sacrificed, you know, taking me to all the lessons, taking me to all the weekend rehearsals, all the competitions, all that stuff. I mean, being a parent now, I realize how much she gave up to give me that opportunity. Just huge.
Is there a sort of natural fit, at least for you, between teaching and, say, performing? Do they go really well together? Is there sometimes tension? Like, how does that relationship work in your career now, let's say?
I think that's a bit of the beauty of being in the sort of professor, being at VIU, having that mm-hmm. flexibility to try to make both happen. It's almost impossible to do both. So, you know, VIU and the teaching job I have here is sort of my main gig. And the playing that I can do on the side is what I can do on the side. There's a few opportunities, you know, that happen in Nanaimo. I have work with the Vancouver Island Symphony, and most of that work happens on the weekends in the evenings. So in the flexibility I have with teaching, most days I'm teaching mornings, which gives me lots of opportunity to sort of be parenting in the afternoon and then gigging at night as things sort of happen. But I would say if that wasn't my main gig, I would probably be looking for more gigs and performing more. Like I would say my performance career is pretty limited. It's certainly not as busy as other performers are, and I probably wouldn't live in Nanaimo doing a performance. Like when I was working in LA, I would work a lot more, even Toronto. Those are such big cities, and there's so many more opportunities.
Yeah.
And you can be gigging every night.
Yeah.
If you know, they might not be the best gigs. You might not love all those gigs, but there's opportunities to get out and get paid. At least when I was there. I'm not sure what the scene is now. It's been 20 years, but.
So you were in LA, you went to CalArts.
Yes.
In LA. Can you talk a little bit about that experience? Maybe like even just living there, obviously performing and work and studying there. What was that like?
Oh, CalArts was like a candy store. It was such an amazing experience. I remember when I arrived there, it was my number one choice for school. I applied to 5 schools on the West Coast. I really wanted to travel to somewhere warm. And so I've been accepted to a couple of schools in Australia because I thought, oh, you know, why not travel and do school at the same time? And then I ended up sort of 2 days before I was supposed to go to Australia, I sort of made a different decision and decided to study in the US, just thinking, again, goal-minded, that I want to teach at a university. And I figured the credentials from an American school would probably speak louder than some of these schools in Australia.
Yeah.
Maybe not, who knows, you know. But so going to LA, there was four or five schools I applied to, and then CalArts was the one I wanted to go to the most, but it was also the most expensive. And I was lucky enough to get some opportunities, some financial support, and then also some teaching work. So I was working as a TA there. I actually had three TA ships, which was one of the things I kept on saying, you know, I can't make it work. And they kept on saying, well, we can't increase your scholarship, but we can, you know, offer you more work. And of course, if you're working in the US, you can work on campus, but you can't technically work off campus, not on a student visa. I remember getting there and opening up the syllabus and looking at what courses I can take. And I called my parents that night and I said, you just won't believe, like, I don't even know, there's 100 offerings. And I only have room for 8, and I want to take 40 of them. And trying to, like, you know, figure out what to take and what to do. And my program was a very sort of wide open. It was sort of a new program called the Performer Composer Program. And so it was a degree that allowed you to focus on performance on one side, but also composition. And it was sort of meant to intertwine performance and composition. So improvisation was all in there, which were all things that I wanted to do, and there was no school for that kind of work. So I just could just grab all these courses. And then, of course, living in Los Angeles, where there's this wonderful lifestyle, and I love that. I mean, we would work our butts off, and then it'd be 8 o'clock at night, and we would all jump in the car, me and my roommates, and we'd go surfing until the sun goes down, which would be about 8, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. And then come back and do more work. So we just sort of lived this sort of active outdoor lifestyle, California lifestyle, and at the same time just playing. I mean, I must have been doing somewhere between at least 10 to 14 hours of sort of music a day, and probably 8 or 9 of that was playing.
Yeah, really special experience, like a fantastic city, but also a great program, and like climate, and just everything kind of came together, it sounds like.
I didn't want to go sort of the cookie cutter path. There was lots of opportunities, and even the training I did as a kid, we had such a strong program here in Nanaimo, would have set me up to go down sort of to some of those schools like UFT or McGill and do the classical program, which is sort of, in my eyes, like a really cookie cutter kind of program. It's, you know, you go there, they put you through the grinder, and you come out the other end, and you're a very well-trained classical violinist. And I wasn't sure that that's what I wanted to do. I was more interested in improvisation and composition and those sorts of things. And so CalArts in York and VIU to a certain extent allowed me to sort of mold my own education and kind of pick the courses I wanted to do and just kind of be the kind of musician I wanted, which has its benefits and its downsides, because you can also just sort of take all the easy stuff if you want and come out with a degree that, you know, you got this great piece of paper, but not necessarily a skill set. But I feel like my skill set allowed me to do all sorts of things that are just sort of down my interests. So.
Hi there. This is Ben Henriquez from the Music Department at Vancouver Island University, and you are listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities on CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo.
I was watching an interview recently with James Horner, who has done a lot of, or he's passed away now, but did a lot of film soundtracks, like some Star Trek 2 and Aliens, and I really like his soundtracks. But so he had this really interesting interview where he talked about some of the kind of challenges of scoring for another artist in another medium, and the sort of particularly time pressure. Like, he was working with James Cameron on Aliens, and that James Cameron, for all of his amazing artistry, sort of had no idea about the musical process and was sort of asking him to do these unreasonable deadline kind of things, which is specific to that story. But just generally, how has that experience been for you, like making music for film and other genres and media?
Well, you asked earlier about how teaching and performance career kind of, are they mutually exclusive, or, you know, how do they compete? And I'd say more than anything, it's my composition career that's suffered the most.
Right.
So admittedly, that bio is probably, you know, a little out of date. I haven't written for film or video games in a long time. It was something I was aspiring to do when I left CalArts. I loved composition. I loved writing. I did a lot of writing for dance. So, you know, writing for movement, essentially. And then I was getting into writing for film too. And I did some work there. I mean, if you know CalArts, it's a school that has all the fine arts kind of under one roof. It was originated by Disney. And so it's one of the best, if not the best, animation school in the U.S., if not the world. I mean, it's just this huge powerhouse. So there's all these talented animators that come out of there. And then there's a film school, there's a dance school, there's a music school, there's everything to do with fine arts school. And it's just in this giant building. So you go to the, you know, the film wing, or you go to the dance wing. And so there were so many opportunities to write. And so I got to meet a lot of directors and animators and filmmakers, and was doing a lot of that kind of work. And I'd say about the first 5 or 6 years out of CalArts, I did that. That phase of my life, and living in LA, you rub shoulders and you schmooze, and there's a whole game you sort of play to meet people and to get your next job. And I remember really clearly having moved to Nanaimo and just kind of got my pinky toe in the door at VIU and teaching a small 2-credit course that, you know, I was thinking would grow into more, which thankfully it did, and luckily it did. But I remember sort of someone asking me and saying, hey, we've got this film feature. Feature film, and do you want to score it? And on the other hand, I had this opportunity to take on another class at VAU. And so I remember like saying, hey, can I call you back? Can you give me 24 hours? And I knew that if I did the film score, it was, you know, going to send me down this sort of path and or the teaching path. And so I thought really long and hard about what, it, you know, which one would be sort of the better bet. And obviously I chose the VAU. And so I feel like it was in that moment where I sort of said goodbye to the sort of film scoring, because when you stop doing it, people stop calling you, right? They kind of forget about you. What was your last film you did? And, you know, I think I did a video game since then, you know, but that was probably 15 years ago. But to answer your question, the process, I really enjoy that process.
Can you tell me what is a chaconne? I've recently got into listening to classical music. I never really did when I was younger, and I listen to it a lot now. Very, you know, layperson way, just for enjoyment. But one thing I sometimes struggle with is thinking about, like, they're not always called the same thing. You know, you get used to a certain kind of logic of calling things songs or whatever in pop music. So chaconne is what?
It's the Bach chaconne ends up being this sort of massive, huge piece that is the final piece in this set of dances. I mean, so he writes this sort of Bible in a sense for solo violin, and it's called 6 sonatas and partitas. And what it is there's 3 sonatas. And each sonata is broken down into 4 movements. So it's called the Sonata of the Chiesa, or a church sonata. So it has a certain sort of specific form, right? That is breaking free from sort of written word form. But a lot of these forms come from text, because music was originally meant to sort of support text and support, you know, written word. And so it's starting to break free from that and become its own thing. But a lot of these forms kind of stick. So these church sonatas start with a slow movement, then a fast movement, a slow movement, a fast movement. And then the partitas are a collection of Baroque dances. So there's all this, you know, which is the other side of music. If it's not for text, it's for dance. So often for text, it'd be related with, you know, on the church side of things. And then if it's, you know, for dance, it's sort of more on the what's happening in folk music side of things. So Bach's kind of borrowing from both. Mm. And writing three pieces in the church style, and then the Sonata Chiesa, and he's writing three, you know, when I say pieces, these are collections of pieces, right? The partitas and then the sonatas. And the partitas are based on Baroque dances. So you get all these different styles of dances. Mm. And the chaconne is one of those dances. And this piece, you know, there's four pieces that precede it. This is a fifth one. And in itself, it's about somewhere between 12 to 15 minutes, depending on how fast you play it. And it's longer than the collection of pieces that precedes it. And it's just this huge monumental piece. So it's sort of based on this ground base where it's a repeating bass line. And even in this piece, that bass line changes to, you know, from the beginning to where it ends up at the end. But essentially that's what it is. It's a piece of music. It's almost like a theme and variations type that's based on this repetitive line. And it's sort of decorated. Interestingly enough, my teacher at CalArts talked about this sort of being a dance that came out of South America, and that it was more of an upbeat dance, and it's more or less played like certainly the chaconnes that I know are all sort of played like funeral dirges. They're all played very slow, and you know, so when I learned this piece originally, I learned to play it quite fast. And then every time I'd shop it around and play it for people, they would always sort of be like, well, that's a strange approach. That's not, you know, that's not how it's done. You know, there's sort of a very dogmatic, it's one of the things I hate about classical music is there's sort of a dogmatic approach of you must do it this way or else, you know, and the schools of thought change depending on East Coast, West Coast, or, you know, history and where it comes from. And, you know, what lineage of teachers you learn from. And so I can sort of trace back my various teachers, who they studied with and what teachers they, you know, you can, there's a sort of very clear lineage of different styles of playing. And so when you sort of challenge that or look at it in a different way, people get sort of uptight about it sometimes. And so it was interesting because in my first review, that was a very, very free or breaking free of that traditional way of looking at it. My teacher at the time also encouraged improvisation and, you know, you don't necessarily have to play what's on the page, which is sacrilegious to others, right? I remember playing this at an audition and someone was like, what? You changed what was on the page and how can you do that? And, you know, the idea of the chaconne was taking one of the harder pieces of the repertoire and breaking it down. So I think I'll still probably talk about some of the, you know, difficulties that you really have to think about just to play the violin. Some of the most basic things that seem so simple, right? You sit down at the piano, you get a key, and you have a note. To do the same thing on a violin takes years to figure out. So we'll probably talk about some of the just innate difficulties, and I'll probably relate them specifically back to that piece of music. So
it sounds really fascinating, and I can't wait to hear you both talk about it and also play it as well. So I'm looking forward to that, and thanks very much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. Thanks to James Mark for joining me in conversation. Technical production by Robin Davies. Music by Greg Bush. The colloquium series will be back in March with Dr. Marnie Stanley, Dean of Arts and Humanities, presenting Holding Space for Queerness in the Classroom. For more information, go to ah.viu.ca and click on Colloquium Series. My name's Theo Finnegan. Thanks for listening.